Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. You ever get that feeling? The walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins.
I'm KC.
And I'm Tyler.
And I'm Brun.
And you're listening to
The Element Podcast.
What is happening, everyone? We are sitting around on the Nebraska Furniture Mart couch again. I love getting to say it because usually that's Tyler's line, but Tyler is doped up at the moment, so he can't really make it good. This might make it for a real good podcast.
I'm always kind of dopey.
What's going on, Tyler?
Oh, just sending an email to somebody I don't want to send an email to.
Tyler's on a little bit of painkiller. He had a little procedure done, but all's well, right?
Yeah.
In the land of procedures.
Oh, it's better than the procedure that Brian had done, so.
Brian's here. Brian.
Yeah.
Our demographic of podcast listeners is heavily male.
Okay.
And then specifically, the 25 to 45 age range is
the
real heavy.
Males.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you have since taken drastic measures to affect your fertility.
That's how we're starting this, huh?
That's right.
I did. I had a vasectomy yesterday.
Uh-huh.
Oh.
Yesterday.
Yeah. Yesterday.
And you were supposed to lay horizontal for 48 hours.
Yeah.
And here you're.
That was yesterday?
Yeah.
No wonder it's ripped open.
We both had procedures yesterday.
Yep. About 12 hours in the bed was more than I can do, so.
Dude.
Had to get up and do something.
There's no way. You were in the bed for 12 hours.
It was probably 6 to 8.
And so you have an open wound.
I do. I have an open wound.
Is that because you didn't spend enough time in
the bed? I don't
know
how many stories y'all want to hear about it, but.
We have to keep it PG.
Yeah, I trying to keep it glued shut.
That ain't good.
No. Now I have a Band-Aid on it. But.
Do you feel like it wasn't successful?
It wasn't bad. It was successful, and it wasn't near as bad as I thought it was going to be.
We'll see.
I think it's a we'll see situation.
It was a 10-minute surgery, and it was,
you paid for it.
Young Michael's freaking out right now.
Wow, look at him.
He hasn't had to have thoughts of
walked into a 7-Eleven and paid for it.
That's right,
right,
man.
No,
he saw a sign outside. You know, it was painted.
Cash,
you know,
only.
That paint that they use, like the letter cutouts for? Yeah, out there.
I still don't understand
guys,
how you got this
done. His
name
badge said MD on it, so I
That's
maybe,
good.
Hopefully. He, I think
that
he
just
did
means
a great
he
job.
Was from Maryland.
Yeah, probably so.
So,
it was.
Are you happy you had it done?
I am, yeah.
Because you don't want any more kids.
I don't want any more children.
You got a two plus a bonus.
That's
right.
That's all I need.
Okay.
I'm grateful for them.
Yeah.
But I don't want any more.
Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah.
I understand.
I always wanted just one child, and now I'm at 3, and here we are.
Here we are.
Done.
What is left of a fertile man before? All right. Well, That's one of the six in the room right now have had that procedure, and it's interesting to hear your perspective. It doesn't make me want it any more than I used to.
It wasn't bad. It wasn't that bad of a deal.
Okay, so with that out of the way, all the important questions we can get to. We did a little prompt here a while back on the Element story. You might have seen one this week, actually. This is the Element Podcast brought to you by First Light Gear, and it is the spring sale. Go over there. First Light, Meteor, all those places, get you some discounted gear. And we're going to talk about some of that stuff right now. I asked a question yesterday. It was Tuesday. And I said, what has got you going right now or something like that? What's got you locked in? And it was still overwhelmingly the majority of people were locked in on deer. Turkeys, fishing, and exploring and scouting were the other options. I think it went deer, fishing, turkeys, and then exploring. It was the order of importance to people. So everybody's still got deer on the brain. And so we're going to do a deer hunting Q&A. We had an open-ended question on the story about a month ago that was pretty much, what subjects would you like us to cover in length in a discussion about deer hunting? And so we had a lot of questions and things submitted, and we're going to spend some time on some of these. Brian's going to read them to us. Some of them might be a little bit shorter. Some of them might be a little bit longer, just kind of depending on how exhaustive we think we should be with an answer. Also, Tyler's lips are a little numb from the stuff he's taking, so y'all pay no mind if anything gets weird over there. It's fine. But Tyler's answer should be good today, I think.
Man, here we go.
Any other thoughts on this, Tyler?
On this?
Yeah, anything that we're doing here.
No.
Okay, let's just get into it then. Brian, first question.
All right, here we go. I would like to hunt with you guys. Let's discuss. Thanks.
Well, recently we opened up applications for internships with the Element, and that is likely closed already. So, missed your chance on that. Appreciate your interest in us.
Got to be locked into our Instagram, you
That's
know.
That's it, man.
I hope that
maybe we get to run up on each other in the woods one day or at the boat ramp or something.
Not in the woods.
No.
All right.
This thing that they're doing at Meteor, right?
Yeah, the Meteor Experiences thing. We might be on some of that at some point in time. We're kind of on again, off again on if we're going to go to one of those or not. But if you got a whole bunch of money, you don't know what to do with it. The Meteor Experiences, it sounds pretty cool. It's just a little expensive, but everything's expensive, dude. Like a bag of chips is $6.29 right
expensive
now.
Expensive is relative.
It's tough, man.
You know.
Yeah, the worst thing you could have done with your money in the past 4 years is save it because it's worth half of what it was. but anyways, the Meteor Experiences thing is pretty cool. They got a duck hunt and a Louisiana just smorgasbord thing. I think that would be really cool, personally. That would be awesome.
Go down there and do some raging Cajun.
Yeah, buddy.
All right, what do deer like to bed in, and how should you hunt that area?
This is very specific to your area. I wish I knew who this was or where your area was. But typically, what we've talked about a lot on this podcast probably, and you've heard it in other podcasts or other people talk about this, is a high stem count area, which means that there are lots of stems in a small area, whatever that respective area is. And anything that it would be considered a high stem count area for your area is probably a lot of times what deer are going to bed in. Now, another thing that you would have to think about is not necessarily how remote, but how unbothered that place is. So typically, if you're talking about bucks especially, they're going to be in a place that just doesn't, it may be 600 yards from a house, but you know, if that person never goes to that piece of the property because it's high stem count, they can't ride a four-wheeler near it or whatever, then that's where a buck is going to bed throughout the summer probably. Last thing I would kind of say here is that I wouldn't necessarily, and we'll say this maybe again at some point on this podcast, I wouldn't necessarily just like think that just because a buck beds there, you have to hunt it. There's a lot of people out there that talk about buck bedding and hunting buck bedding. I would say hunting a bedding area is not a bad idea, but I'm more try to hunt in between the bedding and the food source. And I can say that many times I'm able to kill deer fairly far from bedding, within a few hundred yards of their bedding sometimes, or maybe even more than that. And they're still there in daylight.
I think there's two ways to approach that, to just kind of continue on what you're saying.
if you're hunting in a really high pressured area, then sometimes you have to get real close to the beds. I tend to try to get far away from people, and even on like a state by state basis, so that you can accomplish what you're saying. Where, I mean, if the deer aren't pressured, they're going to be on their feet in daylight, moving around, doing some stuff, and you can kill them. If you're hunting 40 acres that three other guys hunt, then yeah, they might not stand up until dark. The question was about deer, though, too, and not just bucks. So to think about it that way, as far as the how to hunt thing goes, Tyler was very good with like what they bet in, but I think the how to. I don't like to hunt up in bedding areas too much unless it is like the rut or I'm on a hunt and I'm out being super aggressive in the morning. I get right in the bed, like the bedding area stuff. But hunting on the outskirts, I think, is the way to hunt a bedding area and make sure your wind is blowing in a super safe direction. And yeah, that's probably about all I have to say about that. Deer do like to bed. If you're in open country where there's nothing, they like to bed on the shady stuff or in the shady stuff, on the north side of stuff a lot of times.
Also, if you're hunting in the morning when a deer is coming back in, I know a lot of people like to talk about kind of a J-hook thing. So just depending on how much time you have there to hunt and how much time you have left or how aggressive, it will decide or determine how aggressive you want to be. So, you know, I'd be conservative early in the trip and more aggressive later.
All right, bare bones whitetail hunting. Very limited budget and starting from only a good bow. Thanks.
So I'm assuming, like, what else does he need on this would be the question. You know, I think the text box on Instagram only lets you put so much in there, so people were kind of being condensed with this. But if you got a good bow, that's great. I'm assuming you have everything you need for the good bow, so let's go to the other stuff. If I was going to think about footwear, I can only buy one thing, I'd buy a pair of good rubber boots. Mm-hmm. Because you can do about near everything in a pair of good rubber boots. I dare I say you could climb a mountain in a pair of good rubber boots, but I think you could. Those rubber boots will last you all season, unless it's super frigid. Then you might need something with a little more room in it to keep your toes warm. But in general, a pair of good rubber boots is going to be like a really big thing. Beyond that, I think that personally, you can hunt from the ground and be really effective. You just have to think about that as a ground hunter. If you're talking about bare bones, right? That would mean likely not having a stand, a saddle, any of that kind of stuff. If you did want to go into something, saddle hunting is the way to go because it's pretty minimalistic. You're not carrying a big old stand with you. You can stand on the top of your stick. Eric did that for a year, I think, when he first started saddle hunting, and it worked pretty good for him. So, you know, might be something else to consider purchasing. Tyler?
I would say if you're bare bones and you're very limited budget, you're probably hunting public land. You can find them cheap probably, but I would find a frame pack of some sort that you can carry all your stuff in, whatever you might need, and also pack a deer out. Whenever you shoot a deer, just something that you can go ahead and cut it up, pack it out with. Mm-hmm. And then you just hunt with that pack, but I'm sure you can find something at, you know, Goodwill or something like that, or Good Samaritans or whatever. And, you know, something, I think we used to have some JanSports that were like super cheap.
Yeah, went to the bottom of Black Canyon with those.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it's not ideal, but you're talking very limited budget. Sometimes you got to just be tough if you're going to, you know, limit yourself on budget. So, I'd say, a rangefinder is hard for me to not have unless you're just going to limit yourself to 20 yards and in, pretty much.
That's a good one. I would say personally, and this might not be for everybody, but a Onyx subscription is worth the money.
Yeah.
And if you're doing bare bones, maybe you're not traveling, so you can do the single state. I think it's like $8 or something like that. It's not very expensive. And I know that kind of sounds like a plug, but we literally use it every day. We spent probably over an hour on Onyx today already. So it's a thing. And it would absolutely make you more efficient. And if you're out there toughing it, the last thing you want to do is try to tough it and end up in the woods 35 days of terrible hunting. And make yourself not want to do that anymore. So figure out a way to be more efficient, encounter more animals, and good mapping system is going to help you with that.
All right, next question. This one's kind of tricky. How much one should or shouldn't force your children to embrace hunting lifestyle if they lack interest?
My kids are younger, so I'm not going to be great at this. But I do think in general, just from observations, and this is probably not just hunting, right? But if you don't let your kids be themselves within reason, they're going to have animosity towards things, right? Like if your kid wants to make believe it's a dog, you probably shouldn't let that go on for too long past their young age, right? But like, I mean,
well,
my four-year-old, what? Michael still thinks it's a dog. But my four-year-old likes binoculars, and he likes sitting in the blind, but he doesn't really care that much about the deer. He just likes going out and doing the thing. So that's what we do, you know. So I think at least my little bit of insight is to just focus on the things that they do like and try to mold that to where you get to spend time together. Tyler?
Man, I pray often for wisdom. That's something that I, in my prayers, pray for a lot because we're very, very much idiotic compared to the God that created this place. So I have to try to think about, man, like if I can pray that wisdom be imparted to me, then I'll be able to make hopefully my life and others better around me, you know? So I guess what I'm trying to get to here is that I don't really know for sure how to answer this question that great, but I would say that there are things that you have to think about. In certain situations, certain things are worth forcing, like Casey said, but some situations aren't. And I think, like in the case, I'm thinking of an example with my son. He's, you know, bigger than Michael, but he's 12. And he's just, you know, so in other words, he can take the recoil of a 6'5 Creedmoor. And he got hit by a 410 in the cheek when he was 5 years old, and ever since he's hated guns, you know. And the other, this past season, I had to essentially just say, look, you're going to shoot this thing, or I'm fixing to throw that Nintendo in the trash. You know what I mean? And that was like a moment where I didn't make him shoot a deer, but I made him shoot a target with a gun just to prove to him. And he literally wanted to smile after he shot it. Like, he couldn't believe it didn't hit him as hard as he thought it was going to, right? So it was just one of those things where, like, I haven't made him shoot a deer. I haven't made him go hunting with me. And he's been some with me. He really loves fishing a lot. I mean, he will stay out fishing all day and not catch nothing, but he loves it. But hunting, he hasn't really gotten into that much. And I think a lot of it, you have to just determine what your child is actually afraid of and if it's worth conquering, or if it's something that they actually don't have interest in. Do they actually lack interest, or are they only pretending that they lack interest because of the unknown and the fear that they have, right? So, I don't know. There's a lot to it, man. It's hard. It's a hard question to answer, but it's a good question.
Mm-hmm. I asked Patrick about this the other day, my friend Patrick Paysinger, because his son just shot a turkey recently, and he'd shot a few birds, it sounds like. But you know, I think, not to go too far into what he had to say, he had some wise words, but one of the best things that he said is that essentially, you know your kid better than anybody, so you need to make your own judgment call on what the situation is. So that's probably all I know to say. You can help on this a little bit. Asher loves it.
Asher does love it. I think earlier I really was kind of focused on getting him to kill an animal for his first experience. But then, you know, I think it's more about them having fun, and then they grow into that. So Asher loves to go shoot squirrels or shoot at stuff with his BB gun. And now, you know, he killed his first deer this year. So like I said, I kind of found myself wanting to force it upon my child because I love to do it. But I think it's more about the experience and, taking my kids out and let them have a fun time. And that's, I think, you know, they've grown into loving hunting. So
that's cool.
Next question. Does antler size in fact affect the quality of meat?
Short answer, no. I mean, I think what they're getting at is like buck tasting different than doe or whatever, and I just don't find that to be the case.
I don't either. In fact, I don't find older bucks You're going to have a hard time finding a buck over 5 years old in almost every place in America. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are very few places that that exists. And so, and those places don't have many people, right? Or sometimes they have many deer. And so I think that, like, in my experience, even 4 and 5 and sometimes 6 year old bucks still taste really good. Mm-hmm. I don't find that making much of a difference. And if it's too tough for you, then grind it, mm-hmm. you know, and eat the back straps.
Yeah. I think that I, in fact, seems that, like, younger does and stuff almost are kind of mealy to me because they're kind of tender and don't have a lot of flavor to the meat or whatever. I kind of like the, I've grown into liking the, you know, denser meat or redder meat or whatever you might want to call it. And I think a lot of the stuff with the way animals taste is about meat care. I think people just don't take care of their meat very much.
That's a good point. Cause I'll tell you what, one thing I don't really like that a lot of people like is tenderloin. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of time it gets some sort of a urine or gut.
Oh yeah.
And you know, mm-hmm. thing on it or whatever. And that's why I don't like it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Next question. How spring and summer scouting can be used to relate to where deer will be in October?
I've gone first a few times. You turn. I can go. Unless you're finding rubs or old scrapes, it ain't going to do you a lot of good. If you want to get out there in spring and summer scout in a place where the deer can freely travel anywhere. Now, if they're on a river corridor and everything else is open ground, that's a little different, right? But in general, you just will not find a ton of correlation from what you find in the summer as far as like individual animals to the fall, in my experience.
I mean, I'd have to agree. I'd say that winter, like if you, some people call, you know, like what we were talking to our buddy Corey in Bozeman last week and it was snowing up there. So is that spring? Is that winter? You know what I mean? Like it's
Arctic.
Like for some people, depending on where you're from, you might call, you know, like you might call February spring or you might call May spring. You know what I mean? So I don't know. But February might be worth being out there.
Mm-hmm.
But once it starts, you start seeing green up happen, I pretty much think of it as like very hard to find where, you know, deer will relate there. And then that'll help you find out where they'll be in October. I mean, the best thing you can do probably is have trail cameras out and use what you see last year during the season as being what will help you next year.
Mm-hmm.
Next question, calling and stalking.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you in part by O'Reilly Auto Parts, who are in the business of keeping your car on the road and also keeping you happy. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. I use the O'Reilly by me. It's right in downtown where I live. And the team there is super knowledgeable. When you got questions, they're happy to help you out. It's a great store to go into. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts, they can test your battery for free in or out of your car. And don't ignore your check engine light. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today, a free diagnostic service exclusively at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Need your windshield wipers replaced? A brake light fixed? Quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop to get some help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in the store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at OReillyAuto.com/meateater. That's O'Reilly Auto, O-R-E-I-L-L-Y, OReillyAuto.com/meateater. There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land. Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to land.com today to turn one day into today, because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth.
Do it.
What's the question?
Well, it was like things that we'd like
it's
to have
calling slash stalking.
Oh
more.
Yeah. Okay. So discuss. Yeah. So I'll discuss some calling and stalking. I would say that I prefer in open country to rattle more than I do to grunt, and in like timbered country, I prefer to grunt more than rattle a lot of times, or at least first grunt for a while. And I would say that, for calling, I would try to listen to what, you know, like one good thing about hunting, people rag on feeders and stuff from states that don't have that, you know, that you can't hunt feeders or whatever. But one of the best things that I've been able to do around feeders is learn deer. And I get to see deer for more than just a brief passing 30 seconds. I get to see that deer for 20, 30 minutes sometimes. And I get to hear multiple deer talk to each other. And I think that's like super beneficial when it comes to making real sounds, as opposed to the big old grunts, you know, that people try to throw out there all the time. Like, you know, I'm trying to sound like a big buck or whatever. It's like, man, sometimes that big buck doesn't really do much different than a doe does. You know what I mean? So I think that's generally speaking, I fish the same way. I use realistic baits a lot more often than I use big flashy stuff. Not to say that it doesn't work sometimes, but, and I mean, stalking, we could go into a whole podcast on that. I feel
yeah,
like,
yeah, we probably should actually, because I've done a decent amount of it. And, in general, I think that you should try some stalking, especially in open country, because you'll learn a lot about deer and you'll learn a lot about what you can get away with and what you can't. And it might not be the most effective thing, but it'd be great to have that tool in your toolbox if you need to, you know, like there's a chance you see a big giant buck go, lock down a doe in a weird spot. Well, if you've never done it before, man, you're liable to mess it up. But mm-hmm. if you've like tried to make a move on a deer before, you'll at least have a basis as to know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
All right, next question. Management bucks, the correct age to harvest a deer.
D-E-A-R. Is that our typo?
Nah, they know. So this is probably pretty private land oriented on public ground. If it makes you happy and it's legal, I'm all about shooting it. Tyler?
Yes, sir.
A deer's skeletal structure stops growing around 5 years old. Is that correct?
I've heard 4.5 is about when it stops.
I rounded up, so yeah.
Well, 4.
Okay. So somewhere around there, you're going to end up with a mature-bodied animal. Now, there are places around the country, especially like in the South Texas areas, where they're getting deer to be their biggest at 7 and 8 years old, as long as they have plenty of food. So if you're trying to shoot a deer that has good antlers and he's got plenty of food, about near the older the better. But yeah, we're talking about management bucks. So first of all, I have the opinion that you cannot control the genetics of a population unless it is in a confined space, and that space has to be pretty small. So if you're trying to manage for larger antlers, you're really not going to do that very much unless, here's the thought, I learned this from Lee Lukowski, I believe, on the Wired to Hunt podcast, no less. Lee said that him and Tiff would buy properties, and they would go in there, and they would shoot some giant 4.5-year-old 160s. And then within 2 or 3 years, they'd end up with a whole bunch of giant 8 points that scored 130, like ruling the roost on the ridges on these Iowa properties. And so there is this, and it's something that he learned along the way, is that you could treat those 8-pointers as deer to shoot and treat the ones with more genetic potential as deer to keep. And then you can shoot them at 6 and 7 years old whenever they're huge. So if you see a deer looks like an 8-point, he's always going to be an 8-point at 4, might be a good deer to shoot. Whereas like this, for instance, in a place that we hunted this year, we had a 3-year-old 12-point.
On my
maybe
property?
Maybe 2. Yeah.
Huh? On my
no,
property.
Not on your property. It's a little further north here on an open property. But he might have been 2 years old. You remember that deer? He's a 6x6, like a 2-year-old, still would have scored like in the 30s. anyways, it happened. And he was like, a for sure pass, right? But there was a time in my life I'd be like, 12-point, shoot him, you know. And if you never shot to a point you wanted to, that's fine. But if we're managing for deer, it's a thing.
Yeah. I think you said it.
Okay.
Good job.
Thanks.
All right, next question. Your first deer hunt or someone else's first hunt you witnessed?
Who wants to talk about that?
I don't know. What's this?
My first deer hunt was in South Texas. That's my first. This is my first. No, it's not my first deer hunt. This is my first deer kill. Mm-hmm. My first deer hunt was here in East Texas.
You mean first you had a weapon? Is that what you think of as your first deer hunt or the first one you went on?
Yeah, I didn't really go until I was hunting pretty much.
Yeah.
We were walking to our stand and there was, the neighbor had a bunch of oats planted. And as we were coming up out of this creek bottom, I remember a big old line of deer just filing out, running out of this oat field. My dad just bends, like kneels down and goes, put it on my shoulder and shoot that buck right there. And, so I put my gun on his shoulder. I shoot, and yeah, I don't know anything, right? I shoot, deer runs off. He's like, I think you hit him. We go over and look. He kind of assumes that it's a gut shot, and we track him for a while. Couldn't find him. This is a long time ago, y'all.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember being super disappointed that I shot that deer and not killed it, you know, and hit it. So that was my first deer hunt.
My first deer hunt was in Brownwood, Texas. And we had that leash for a few seasons. And the first year, I was probably like 5. And my granddad, who's since passed away, so you can't charge him, and me was a youth, so you can't charge me at that point in time, was hunting with a .22. We were trying to shoot a deer because it didn't have any recoil. And I didn't kill one. But I shot at it a couple yearlings and stuff. So, yeah, that was interesting. I wouldn't suggest it.
All right, next question. Is mule deer on public land?
We get to take this how we want to. The best state to hunt mule deer on public land is the state you can find them in. They're kind of hard to find.
Yeah, I hunted them in Colorado one time.
That's a good place.
It's a bit historically a good place for hunting mule deer on public mm-hmm. land.
Because there's a lot of public land there.
Yeah. And I think for a long time there was pretty good mule deer on public land there. But I think that maybe a trend in a different direction.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are thinking that with the wolves. Well, but I was thinking before that.
In a second, there's a question about them.
Is there?
Them canines. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a good synopsis.
I think it would be fun to hunt mule deer on public land, but I just like hunting deer, and whitetails to me are probably superior.
We get to talk about that in a second too.
Oh boy. Next question is knowing when to move locations when hunting public. They're seeing bucks, but not mature.
If you're seeing bucks, I don't know. That's kind of hard to say. If you're seeing multiple bucks, but you're not seeing a mature buck, I think you're in a pretty good spot. It might just be that there aren't a lot of mature bucks on public land. You know, this is pretty subjective depending on where you're at and what time of year it is too. But if it's late season, you might have to just go deeper to find a mature buck because they tend to hole up pretty hard mm-hmm. after the hunting pressure and after the rut.
Yeah, I would say got it right. I mean, especially depends on what time of year too. I mean, if it's if it's the rut and you're seeing bucks, I'd probably hang in there.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's early season, depending on what the property looks like, I might be willing to move pretty quick.
All right, the next question is meat hunting for us, new to the game.
Man, go somewhere where there's a lot of targets and find a way to use a gun because you can stretch out your range that way. If you truly are meat hunting, you know, find you a place that there's a lot of meat running around and sit somewhere you can see a lot.
Yeah, there's plenty of states that have gun seasons and lots of deer in them, especially like east of the Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
Or pig hunting.
Yeah, pig hunting too.
Yeah, you can do that all year long with a thermal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. At night.
That's right. Your trip.
Yep.
All right. Next question is hunting scrapes.
Scraps.
Tyler?
What about it?
You killed a big deer at a scrape.
Yeah, I've killed a few deer at some scrapes.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say that.
Hunting scraps. I just now caught that.
If you're hunting scrapes, you know, probably it depends on a lot of things, right? But the like late October. From then on is when you kind of probably want to focus on it. A lot of people think that scrapes kind of don't, they become somewhat not hot once the deer really get into like the heart of the rut. And I would say that they're probably right to an extent. I actually don't spend a lot of time hunting scrapes during the peak of the rut. But I wouldn't see a scrape and not hunt there. Like if I thought it was a good place to hunt, if there was going to be deer hanging around or whatever. In fact, if I was in a isolated bedding area and I saw a scrape, I probably would hunt within shooting distance of that scrape because there's a high chance that deer gets up, goes and checks the scrape. And then what they'll do a lot of times, deer, after they get up from a bed, they really like a lot of times are slow to do anything. They just like they get up, they pee. They lick a branch, they stare off in the distance, they move a few feet, they lick another branch, they work a scrape. I mean, they really get to move. And it's like watching somebody in the morning waking up before they have caffeine, you know what I mean? And so I think like that's a scenario where I would hunt a scrape, you know, in early to mid-November. And then after that, I mean, I've killed a deer in late December over a scrape too. So, I mean, it can happen from... And I think of it also as late October, you've got a better chance that deer showing up in the daylight. When I think before late October, a lot of times you're going to have some night movement involved with scrapes that may not be worth the risk at that point in the season. Hunting those.
Sounds good to me. I don't really have a lot more to add to that, except I like them.
Mm-hmm.
The next question, drawing bow on deer sub 30 yards.
Well, if you're in a tree, that's always helps.
Mm-hmm.
Being on the ground, it's real hard to draw your bow when there's a deer around. You got to pick it out. But, of course, when a deer's got his head behind something, when the deer's moving is a good time, when the deer's not looking at you. I mean, you think about I shot a deer a few years back that ran into a fence after I shot it. Y'all may have seen it. If you haven't, you need to go watch it. It's on our YouTube channel. But I'm just like sitting there with pressure on my string, ready to draw at the first opportunity. And something happened in the woods, like 200 or 300 yards away. I don't know if a stick fell or if a deer was over there or what, but my deer kind of whipped his head around and looked. And as soon as that happened, boy, I jerked the bow back. And here's the thing. I think that people mess up. People think that you need to slow draw on deer, and you do sometimes. But sometimes it's a real good idea to just get that bow back. Because you got a split second where that deer's not looking at you or he's distracted or whatever. You get that bow back and you can get settled before he knows what's going on. You can get him killed before he can spook out of there.
For sure. I'm with you on that, man.
I kind of got a little hype just in thinking about it.
Let's go, dude. Let's go. I mean, you hit some good points there. I think that another thing, this comes back to like me being hunting feeders a lot over my life. Is I've learned a lot about when a deer is actually paying attention to something and when he can see you and what the – and here's the thing. Deer vision works. They have a pupil that's kind of horizontally oriented so that they can see a long horizon, a lot of space across the horizon. They also – they don't focus as well as we do, but they can see a broader, like where our focus is dialed and then everything else is peripheral, theirs is like, it's like not quite as dialed focus wise.
It's kind of panoramic.
It's kind of panoramic. But it does have the peripheral as it goes further out. There is a peripheral effect. So even if you can see a deer's eye, if you can barely see it, then it can see you, but it doesn't quite register like if it was looking at you or if you're on a dead on 90 to its head. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, in other words, the more sharp the angle is that deer's towards the back of his head that you have, even if he can still see you, sometimes it's worth getting pulled back. Another thing I would say is if you think the deer is going to see or hear you draw, then you should probably have a shot at him when you draw the bow back. Mm-hmm. And that there's a case for KC's, what he was saying, pulling back quickly, right? Because if the deer is going to see you, say your window's not very long and you think the deer might see you, you wait till he gets in the gap, you pull back, he doesn't see you, then you got to get, as soon as you get back, you got to go ahead and grunt stop him, right? So everything has to happen quick. And I would say that goes back to practicing too in the summer. You need to be practicing, like, you know, and this is probably not something, one of those things that we might not should say, but you need to practice shooting pretty quickly. Like, going ahead and getting dialed and shooting pretty quickly. And hopefully, you know, you know what your effective range is within that. It may be 15, 20 yards. That's fine. If maybe 30 or less, whatever. But like a quick shot might have to happen. And that's, I mean, you work hard to do that. If you're a recurve shooter, it's no problem. So I don't know why it shouldn't be with your compound. You should practice going straight back to your anchor points and getting the shot off quickly.
Yep. Yeah, that's good stuff, man. One thing I'd add that I didn't think about a while ago is that you need to realize that deer's eyeballs are gyroscopic. So whenever they put their head down to eat, those pupils don't turn with the deer's head, or they don't go with it. They stay flat. So when a deer's got its head down eating, that doesn't mean it ain't looking at you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something to keep in mind.
Yep.
They are prey animals, and God made them to where they don't want to get eaten.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, next one down.
All right, next question. How to distinguish buck beds, habitat, and travel for beginner hunters?
Okay. For beginners, I would go back to what I said earlier. Buck beds, let's go ahead and just not worry about those right now. You know what I mean? Let's just think about bedding areas, okay? Uh-huh. This is where deer live, not necessarily bucks, but just where deer might live. And it goes back to high stem count, remote, or reclusive areas where deer are not bothered, at least. the habitat that deer are going to want to live in is usually, if you can find this, a mixed habitat. You're going to have some of it's going to be in the woods, some of it's going to be in open grasses, some of it's going to be in willow thickets, and they need edge. They love edge, actually. So they're going to use, the way to get edge is to have two differing types of habitat, okay? So to think about edges as being places deer might travel, is a good place to start in any situation as a beginner. And then understanding that in corn and bean country, especially, deer are going to move to those corn and beans. So you got to really understand what is it that deer are eating in your area. Is it acorns? Is it corn? Is it beans? Is it feeders? Is it alfalfa, you know, wheat? What is it? So finding out where the deer are is pretty simple, right? You can go out and depending on your state, maybe look with thermal or spotlight, or you can even just be there at the end of daylight, see the deer out there, then you know that that's where they are destinating, and if that's the right word. And then you can end up figuring out where they come from based off of your Onyx map or whatever, looking at the habitat that surrounds it. What else, Casey? Anything else?
Travel. I think if I read this question right, I think this person's trying to say, how do I determine what is buck and what is just deer? I think the travel, if you can find rubs, mm-hmm. like a rub line, deer aren't going out in the woods, in my opinion, and going down like through an area and creating a perimeter with rubs, like a rub line. The reason rub lines develop is because a deer habitually uses that area on a trail or a deer movement area, and he ends up, or multiple bucks end up, creating rubs through that section. So if you can find rubs, you know you're in a place that bucks travel around in, mm-hmm. or that potentially they hold up in, or what am I, stage in next to food. That would be something to keep in mind. I think habitat, one of the things that I think about is a lot of times people look at something and be like, oh, that's super thick in there. There's a lot of deer in there. And I don't actually find that to be the case. I think that deer like seclusion and they like to have cover. But like just because something is a 30-acre briar thicket doesn't mean that there's deer in there.
Mm-hmm.
Or I think about cedars where we live. If you find a big old cedar thicket, you're like, oh, look at all that deer bedding. And there's actually not a lot of deer in the dense cedar. You know, it's a wasteland. There's nothing for them to eat in there. So I like to look at an area, determine there's deer around there, and then find like the one or two or three or four little pockets that like, man, this makes a lot of sense. So maybe that's something to add in there.
I would just also say if you're a beginner hunter, just don't expect it to happen that mm-hmm. fast. You know what I mean? It's going to take potentially a few years to figure things out really well. So
be happy shooting a forky, man.
That's right. Just have fun out there.
Your first buck's a big deal, no matter how big it is.
Mm-hmm.
Next question. What is something you found out the hard way is essential to keep in your pack?
Well, the cliche thing would be toilet paper, yeah. for sure.
That's what we were all thinking.
Eric's still using the neck gaiters, though.
I think about your Neil guy. And having a sharp knife is like a big deal, especially for public land hunting because
blaze orange too.
Yeah, it's a good one. if you're private land hunting, a lot of times you can go get the truck or the ATV or whatever and load the thing up and take it and get it gutted. But if you're public land hunting, you probably got a good size walk out and maybe you got to come back or whatever. You got to get the guts of that thing. We're talking about meat care earlier. Like, that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, having something to be able to do that or completely process it all the way in the field.
I'd say one thing I really like is rubber wire. I've been really liking that the last couple of years. And, I mean, I don't know if you could say essential, but, man, I keep it in there. And I found out that it makes my life easier. Whether I'm hanging a GoPro on a tree or a bow or you know, my pack, or, you know, if I'm climbing up and I want to tie something onto my pack real quick, it's so easy with that rubber wire. You know, you can hang anything with that next to you, and you could probably hang a grunt call if you wanted to mm-hmm. really easily.
Next question. What do you guys pack for food on an all-day hunt?
No such thing.
I figured you'd say that. Michael and I did some all-day hunts this year, but we weren't in the tree all day, but we were out all day, and we just packed whatever we wanted to.
I could do that.
Yeah, it was nice.
The tree thing bothers me bad, though.
Yeah.
I can't do it.
I understand. Dude, sitting in, I mean, yeah, it's rough. But
just a two-hour kind of guy?
We just packed where we wanted to.
Barely longer than you on that.
Did a PB&J, had some fried chicken, apple. I mean, you got to fuel yourself, man.
Yeah. I have a book. I think it's called Fly Fishing the Rocky Mountain Backcountry. I think it's the name of the book. I bought it from a Barnes & Noble or something. A Half Price Books when I lived in Dallas. And it's this guy that's like he does like these through hikes. Like he'll go hiking, you know, I don't know, 80 miles or whatever, you know what I mean, through to another road. And he'll have somebody pick him up over there. And he fishes the whole way through. Like all this, you know, and anyway, he goes through his whole system and he's like, he carries heavy amounts of food because he thinks that those heavy canned foods and stuff like that are just way better fuel than all the dry stuff that you can, the freeze dry and stuff that you can
have.
Yeah,
and then you have to provide water for the freeze dried stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That ain't no good.
Yeah. He carries like green beans and stuff like that. You know what I mean?
See, I feel like green beans don't have a lot of calories in them, but it's a tasty
thing. Well, I don't
know
if he carries green beans. Yeah. I'm saying just like canned foods, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not like
makes sense. The more we do this, the more we eat about as normal as you can. Anything we go do,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I think it makes me feel a whole lot better.
We ate pretty good on that mule deer hunt Eric and I did in Colorado mm-hmm. a few years back. But we horse packed in, so we were able to carry, you know, some stuff in. But we did eat freeze dry when we spiked out from there.
Mm-hmm.
But we killed the next day, so
yeah.
We didn't have to just gorge ourselves on freeze dry, you know. Mm-hmm.
Next question. Would you have a guest on the show that hunts deer on public land in Florida?
We have.
We would.
Huh?
We have.
We have?
Actually, that was on the Wired to Hunt
feed. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Is that we will have a guest like that. In fact, reach out to us, everyone. We're going to try to keep a running list. Maybe don't do it yet, but we'll probably have to do the Rutfish Radio again this year for Wired to Hunt. And if you want to be featured on Rutfish Radio, around about August, send us your info. We'll give you another plug for this. Don't flood us yet. We'll kind of keep a document going of who we can rely on to give us a report from around the country.
Mm-hmm.
Next question. The preparation that goes into a spot and stock in states, where do you start?
I took out the state in here. It said states like blah, blah, blah. Don't worry about the in-state. So preparation that goes into spot and stock in open country. Essentially, it's what they were saying. Well, I don't know if I ever. Do you ever leave the house like I'm going to go spot and stalk? Like when we go
pigs.
Somewhere? Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I think they're talking about whitetail.
Deer's kind of opportunity.
Yeah,
based.
I don't know. The only thing that I would do different than when I go to hunt a tree is have like sticks in a platform pretty much. I mm-hmm. think, I mean, usually maybe you don't need quite as many clothes, but you do. I mean, you're going to need a jacket sometimes because mm-hmm. you might have to sit there for a few hours or something.
Optics. That would be a thing that I treat a lot differently. On
I guess,
spot
yeah,
and stalk.
That's true. You would want to probably a spotter.
Spotter, bigger binos. I mean, when we're in like big timber stuff, I kind of think you're right. Like, eights are pretty nice on binos. But out there in that big country, and the 12s are where it's at, man.
Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of times you guys really prepare by looking at the Onyx maps.
Yeah, for sure.
And wind direction. I know
for sure.
y'all really worry about
yeah,
that stuff.
Yeah, we do, for
yeah.
sure.
The,
maybe not you, but we do.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, like, that's it's not something I prepare for before I know that there's a deer there, really. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I'm like, I look at Onyx, I figure out where I'm going to sit and spot first, but then when I find a deer, then I have to look at Onyx again to figure out
yeah.
how I'm going to get there and where the wind's blowing and all this and that.
Yeah. The question they asked is, where do you start? So
to find,
let me think about this.
Deer to hunt? Spot and stalk?
It's like
stone?
Preparation. And if we're talking about preparation for spot and stalk, the number one thing I would tell you to do is to practice longer shots. That might be a little bit taboo or whatever, but listen, a deer within 20 on the ground is almost impossible. Like, it just does not happen. There's some people that are like, there it is, but I promise you, like, your shots are going to be from 25 to 50 very, very often.
Also, it's way easier to get drawn on a deer that's 45
uh-huh.
than 15,
uh-huh.
you know what I mean, or 20.
Yeah.
Like, that's just, if you draw on a deer that's at 20, there's a high chance it bumps.
Mm-hmm. So I think that practicing with your bow is be where I would start. And practice from your knees, practice sitting down, and you know, maybe even do some of that. You know, I kind of laugh at it a little bit, but I know a lot of people like it. But like the train to hunt type stuff, you know, maybe get your heart rate up. Run down the driveway and back and then try to shoot or something like that. You know, might be or shoot with a countdown or draw and then take three steps and shoot, stuff like that, like real-world scenario stuff.
I would also shoot with your quiver on in a mm-hmm. slightly windy situation
because
mm-hmm. I've come to find out that I almost don't want to shoot with my quiver on
mm-hmm.
Anytime, really, but, like, especially in the wind. Like, I would rather just not even shoot. So just make see if that affects you and how much you know, what your distance is on that or whatever as well. Other than that, man, like, I don't know for sure what else I would do in preparation, but that's a good one, is making sure that I can shoot a long ways.
Hot right. topic coming in.
Casey, this one's for you. Should states give priority or more benefits to their residents? Pros and cons.
So this is super loaded because I know that a lot of people have some real high opinions of this. We kind of hunt a lot of different states, so we deal with this in a lot of different situations and scenarios. I would tend to say, personally, I think that states should give more benefits. I don't know if I want to say priority or not, but essentially, people who are dealing with wildlife impacts should be given something. So let me make that a little more clear. If you're a landowner and you're making a big field of soybeans and the deer, you're feeding some deer, or you have CRP on your ground and the deer are living there, or you're doing things, whatever, I think that there is a burden on you to that. And it would, it shouldn't be like a shot in the leg to have deer on your property. You know what I mean? I'm by no means in favor of the redistribution of wealth, but I don't want it to be like a thing that hinders people to have deer. You know, I've almost seen it where people are like, I hate the deer. Let's just burn it all down and make sure no deer can live here. You know, you don't want landowners to feel that way. So my short answer is yes, but it shouldn't be unfair. Tyler?
Sounds great.
All right.
I'm kind of disappointed, Casey.
Why?
All right.
Next you want question. Me to say that non-residents have rights to the deer?
I know what you have inside of you.
No, that's how I really feel.
It is.
I mean, yes, there is a situation where you say non-residents per capita foot a larger portion of the bill because we pay a lot more, but...
That's more like it.
You know, if you talk about general numbers, though, like most states, the residents do pay quite a bit of money because there's more residents than there are non-resident hunters. So, I don't know. In general, I don't want the federal government to determine anything about wildlife. I'd rather it be the states than the feds. So, we'll let the states determine what they want to do with it.
All right, next question. How mule deer... Oh, boy. How mule deer are superior to whitetail? What about
Tyler brought this up.
Are mule deer superior to whitetail? Let's rephrase
that. No, this person is wanting to, they want us to talk about how mule deer are superior.
No.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they ain't.
Well, maybe in body size. That's about it. Right? You think with them big old ears they could hear better, but they don't. Tyler, you wanted to talk about this a while ago.
Did I?
Yeah.
I will say that whitetails are superior to mule deer. And this is why. They outcompete them. They are smarter. And they're more adaptable.
Yeah, name a state where they're trying to extirpate the mule deer so the whitetail can do better.
Yep.
That doesn't exist.
Yep.
Name a state where they're trying to extirpate the whitetail so the mule deer can do better. Every single one that they both exist in.
Yeah. So this is not a diss on mule deer opportunity. This is just me addressing this question. I think mule deer are awesome. In fact, I would love to shoot a big, big mule deer sometime. But there's just something about whitetails, man, that are just cool. Everybody gets to hunt them. Everybody has a big story about a big, big one they've seen. It's just, it's like, you know, I don't know. It's almost like sports, you know, like every, like these just, there's historic stories and situations and things, and everybody relates to it because everybody played baseball or basketball. A lot of people, right, did when they were growing up, or football or whatever. It's just, that's what whitetail feels like to me. Mule deer feels like kind of this thing that everybody kind of wishes that they could go do a couple times because it's, you know, because those non-residents don't get a whole lot of favor sometimes.
Yes, right.
So, in my experience, mule deer have acted a little bit dumber than whitetail. And that sounds, I don't know a nice way to say that really. Because they still, you know, exercise things that make them tough to hunt. They just don't seem quite as in tune. And maybe it's because they don't have the hunting pressure or something on them that whitetails do, but yeah. That's my two cents on that whole thing.
All right, next question. I have found the buck. Now how do I put myself in a position to kill it?
Hunt the best day in the best scenario that you have. I think that one of the things that I have done in the past, if I found a target buck, is to try to jump in there too early and try to get him killed. And, you know, honestly, if you're not dealing with a ton of hunting pressure, you wait till November 7th on a good cold north wind, and there's a chance you get to kill him. You know, going in there on a hope and a prayer is a good way to mess it up.
Yeah, I think, like, the year I hunted the ranch buck, I hunted him for, like, 18 days almost straight. I think I missed, like, 2 days somewhere in there.
Probably when you went to Kansas.
Yeah, probably. They definitely, I guess it was one day for sure. Mm-hmm. And anyway, that deer, I hunted him a bunch, but I hunted pretty conservatively. So, you know, I wanted whatever. The reason I jumped around was because of the wind. Anytime the wind would change, you know, or if I'd learned something about what he was doing. But I hunted pretty conservatively. And in the end, I got to see him several times and almost kill him a couple times. And then finally, I got him on the 30th of November. But the reason I was conservative, but I also, there was a few times, I mean, every time I went in there, like, there was something I was probably going to give up. It just wasn't a high chance he was going to do that. But I was willing to do that because the first day I saw him was November 12th. So we're talking about pretty much after that, you know, the rut is going to only cool off, you know, from about, I don't know, the 20th on especially. So, you know, I had to be a little bit aggressive, but I was conservative because I didn't have a ton of hunting pressure around me. So it just depends on that, you know, how much hunting pressure you've got around you. It's good to know what your neighbors are doing or what they like to do or whatever, if that's hunting or whatever it might be. So, yeah, you pretty much said, though, just find a good date and hunt good winds. And if you have to be more aggressive, then just get up in there on a good date and on a good, you know, time of year.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you in part by O'Reilly Auto Parts, who are in the business of keeping your car on the road and also keeping you happy. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. I use the O'Reilly by me. It's right in downtown where I live. And the team there is super knowledgeable. When you got questions, they're happy to help you out. It's a great store to go into. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts, they can test your battery for free in or out of your car. And don't ignore your check engine light. Ask for O'Reilly VeriScan today, a free diagnostic service exclusively at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Need your windshield wipers replaced? Brake light fixed? Quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop to get some help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in the store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/meateater. That's O'Reilly Auto, O-R-E-I-L-L-Y, O'ReillyAuto.com/meateater. There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land. Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to land.com today to turn one day into today, because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth.
So these are questions in response to an Instagram post. Y'all were talking about the hardest. What is the hardest part?
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So next question or statement is going to be finding the time to hunt while juggling the family schedule.
I think that that's a difficult thing for a lot of folks. It's pretty relatable for a lot of people. I think that if you say family, I think you're implying that possibly you're married and maybe you have kids. I think that you should have a serious talk with your spouse a long way from hunting season and let them know, like, hey, this really means a lot to me. And you need to have realistic expectations too. Not, hey, I'm going to be gone for the whole month of November, but like, hey, I would really love November 3rd through the 10th to be able to take this trip. Is there a way that we can work together to make that happen? And you know, I understand everyone's situation is different at home. But if you have a spouse who cares about you and you present it that way, there's a chance that y'all can find some way to make it work. So I think that being upfront and honest and not asking for too much and not, you know, not putting a burden on the other person or not putting a ridiculous burden is probably a good way to do it. You know, hey, here's, let's set out a list of goals, things that you want to accomplish that you want done around the house. That way this is easy for you. Hey, I got the kids are going to stay at my mom's place on the weekend. That way you'll have a little bit of break, you know, whatever, you know, I think, but I just think that good communication solves a ton of issues and good communication in this situation would help a lot. Tyler says he's good with that one.
Nailed it.
All right.
All right. The next statement. So the hardest part is the mental struggles.
I'm guessing like not seeing the action you want.
I think that this is more like getting down. Maybe that is not seeing the action. Maybe that's what you mean by that. I think that maybe you're a better person to answer this than me. I'm not saying that you struggle
Tyler
mentally.
Has more mental struggles.
But in the moment, yes, Tyler does. What were we doing something just the other day? It's just turkey hunting. It's the video that's out on our channel. I'm not trying to be mean to you, but he's belly aching and there's literally a turkey like 60 yards. It's like, oh, we're never going to kill one.
Yeah.
But I'm the guy who.
Well,
like,
it's because I made a mistake.
Yeah.
That's why. It's because I didn't really.
I didn't do what
I should have done. You know what I mean? And that's what really was burning me up.
Yeah. Let me just say that I also struggle mentally, but it's after the hunt. Like, I get real depressed and things don't go my way. But in the moment, I'm just like, what's the next thing? Mm-hmm. Tyler kind of approaches things a little differently.
Yeah, I tend to really, like, struggle through for sometimes a couple of hours, like, dealing with the fact that I made a dumb decision or something. And then I get over it, and I'm like, whatever, I'm fine. You know what I mean? Like, next thing. But it's not immediate for me. But I mean, like, I would say the mental struggle stuff, you have to know, like, are you a KC or are you a Tyler, probably? And at the end of the day, it doesn't really even matter if you are one or the other, but that you can be optimistic in some fashion and just understand that, like, I don't know, this stuff, man, I don't know. I don't know of a nice way to put this. I'm just going to shoot you straight here. We are living in America in 2024, and we're hunting white-tailed deer. Like, it could get way worse. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It is way worse for millions and millions of people. Billions of people, probably. Right? So, I mean, just try to keep that in perspective and be thankful for what we get to do. Don't be sad or depressed because deer aren't doing, you know, things that are what you think they might do or whatever, be mad that you're an idiot. You know what I mean? That's what I do to myself. I'm like, why was I an idiot? Do it. What was I thinking? That's what kind of, it's
Michael's
more about.
Michael's nodding his head because he's mad that you're an idiot too.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. You know, but that's what, I mean, it really is. It's like, it's if you're struggling, it's because you either haven't figured the deer out yet, or you maybe not even, you're a new hunter or whatever, but like, it's not the deer's fault. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's your fault.
Yeah.
So be mad at yourself. Don't be sad and depressed and miserable about what's going on. You know, figure something out. That's what KC would do. So figure out how to do it. And I again, I'm not trying to be mean by saying that. That's just me not knowing how to just do anything but just shoot you straight here and say, man, I understand it means a lot to us. I promise you it means a lot to me. But we got to try to put stuff in perspective sometimes and just, you know, be glad that we get to hunt.
The next statement was, the hardest part is the money it costs.
Even how much gas it is to go scout. Well, brother, I got news for you. Don't do that.
Don't scout.
Yeah, don't scout.
Yeah. I mean, we do spend a lot of time on X scouting. Mm-hmm. It's a lot cheaper than driving somewhere.
I say that kind of tongue-in-cheek because you and I have spent our fair share of time in the woods scouting in non-deer season
situations.
By the
way, extremely poor.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not kidding. Like, we've been very poor while finding ways mm-hmm. to split gas and go somewhere to scout. Mm-hmm.
So, I've done it. But if you want to take out something that costs you money, take the scouting out and mm-hmm. maybe add one day onto your trip when you do go or whatever and just do some in-field scouting or whatever. Yeah. You know, like, that might be an easy spot to start. The other thing is, you know, go to a cheaper state. If you're talking about out of state, you know, or hunt your home state. Mm-hmm. You know, like here in Texas, I realize that we have some great privileges, and one of those being that our state's ginormous. We can go hunt like whitetail in five different eco regions. You know, like mm-hmm. and there's actually a crack on it, but in one of those regions, there's a bunch of public land. It's just not really something I want to go hunt. So you know, there's that. I just think that if you want to do the shoot your straight thing, like Tyler was talking about, in the grand scheme of everything, hunting doesn't cost a whole lot. I mean, dude,
you can make it fairly affordable.
Absolutely, you can. It costs a bunch of money to dip snuff. It costs a bunch of money to drink energy drinks. I got this morning. I was real tired. I stopped and got a Celsius. It's $3, $3.25. You do that four times a week, brother. That's a lot of money. You do that 50 weeks a year, you're talking about adding up some money.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, just don't do that.
Yeah.
You know? A brewed coffee at home is 25 cents a cup, maybe less. You know, it's nothing. So, like, find some ways to save money. And this kind of goes back to that communication thing. If you're in a family, like, it doesn't do a lot of good for you to save money if it gets absorbed somewhere else. So maybe having a hunting fund that you can contribute to in some way, shape, form, or fashion. That way that money is designated and you know it's there. Mm-hmm. And as opposed to getting to November 3rd and be like, crap, man, I only have like $320 in my bank account and $250 that's going to go to a tag. How do I do this? You know?
Mm-hmm. Man, we get it. We get it. We've been there. Mm-hmm. If you want to know, this is just a little insight for you. But, you know, we started our YouTube channel before a brand called The Hunting Public started their YouTube channel. But if you want to know one big thing that we struggled with at the beginning that they didn't, was we live in East Texas where there aren't very big deer, and so we had to travel. Well, we were broke, so mm-hmm. we couldn't go traveling to other places that had lots of big deer. And that's just the way – I'm not saying this in any sort of a bitter fashion. In fact, we know several of those guys over there, and they're just fine. We like them. They're friends. Mm-hmm. But I'm just saying that it was a struggle for us for years too. So I just want you to know that we relate. We're not trying to be we're not trying to not have a heart when we say this, but you really do have to just figure out how to allocate as much as you can, and then you just got to work within that. And hopefully next year you get a raise, or hopefully you work into a better job or whatever that is.
Or, you know, this is a long road to hoe, okay? But start you a YouTube channel, start you a podcast, and get you a couple of people that you can hang out with that can mutually benefit you in this stuff. Mm-hmm. It's what we did. And
that's why Brian's here.
Yeah, that's why Brian's here. So we can pay for his Ford
Tour.
And so, but like, I mean, really, you look back at some of our early partners, they weren't paying us very much money at all, but it literally was just financing what we wanted to do.
Yeah. And
that was go hunting.
When you can say to your wife, hey, we made this money mm-hmm. doing this, then it's easier to spend $500 that somebody gave you for advertising than, you know. Mm-hmm. So there's ways to do it, guys. And I would really go back to, like, I'll be honest here, everybody's got something, but if you drink or you smoke or you dip, then you can't complain.
Brother, don't complain. Yeah. Or you snooze or whatever. You call it dipping when you snooze?
When I'm asleep. I try not to have one in.
What?
When you snooze.
Snooze.
Snoozing. Stop, Casey. All right, the next question is, the hardest part is sitting still in a tree. This is the absolute hardest part.
Yeah, yeah.
Brian, you should answer this.
Guys, I'm good at this. here's my thoughts on it. The first 2 hours of daylight and the last two hours of dark are when the deer are moving.
You so sit any from 5:30 a.m. to 7:30 a.m., is that what it is? Because no. You usually are on camera about 7:37.
No, stop. That was once. That's when the deer are moving. I feel like sitting 4, 5, 6 hours is pointless. Maybe a couple of days through the peak of the rut, you know, I might sit a little longer. If I have a deer patterned showing up every day at 7:30, he's not there at 7:37, you know, I'm probably going to get down and do something different. it could be difficult.
Dude, you're funny, man. Go.
Some things that I've, you know, I try to do is I try to occupy my time probably on my phone or something.
Snooze. When I do,
or, you know, playing a game, reading, stuff like that helps me sit a little longer. Yeah. But, you know, all in all, we're sitting out in the outdoors enjoying it. So if you want to get down at 7:37, just do it.
That's right.
Man, I'm with you on that.
I think that, I mean, there's some level of, like, struggle you need to put yourself through sometimes to make things happen. But we are trying to have fun, right? Mm-hmm. And if you're not having fun, then maybe think about something different. Being comfortable matters. Being warm matters. Mm-hmm. Being not hungry matters. And one thing that I've been thinking about, and maybe this is the time to mention it, I think Tyler may actually be like the brainchild behind this, but peeing out of the tree when you have a chance as opposed to peeing when you need to is a big deal. And I've just kind of realized this lately, okay? Like if you have a deer or a turkey come in, you can't go. So you better get it done when you can. You know, it's a thing.
Yeah. Also, putting your jacket on before you get cold, because in the evenings, because about the time you get cold is when that deer comes in usually. So,
yeah.
I usually as soon as I stop sweating, put that jacket on.
Next question is about the grind, which I think the mental thing we talked about earlier probably kind of describes pretty good.
Yeah.
The next one, they have a real problem.
Stay positive, man. Just know that it can happen on November 30th, or like I said, I killed a deer on a scrape on like December 28th one year. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So just know that things can happen. And like my good friend Anthony Warren likes to say, you know, if you want, well, actually, you say this. He says a different, very similar quote, but if you want amazing to happen, you got to give it a chance.
That's
you
right.
You know what I mean? So
that's right. Pray about it, man. Yeah. If it's a grind, pray about it.
Yeah.
And you'll feel better.
You will.
Brian?
This is the next hardest part is getting corn from over there and bringing it over here.
Well, you just better hunt you a state that you can bring it over.
Get your four-wheeler.
That's right. 50 pounds, you know, dude, we've had some death hikes before with 100 pounds of corn on our back.
Yeah.
That's not fun.
Last year, setting up a new place in Kansas. Golly.
Yeah, that was not fun.
Next question is hunting with a longbow and need to get in within 20. I did it last year, but wind shifted and buck said, see ya.
Man.
Mm-mm.
The longbow just isn't a good idea.
Brian says long gun.
I know who said this, and I know he just kind of has a passion for it, but that's just, I mean, you're going to have to have you with deer encounters and not deer kills if you're going to hunt with a longbow. You know? I mean, some guys kill a bunch of deer, I mean, you know, whatever, but in general.
I would say also just set up in the landmark tree. If you want a deer to come within 20 yards, you set up in the landmark tree, the tree that's out in the middle that they come to, and shoot them in the chest at 8 yards or whatever.
Next, the hardest part is surrounding property management, poachers, low fences, and low population.
Sounds bad.
Yeah.
Especially Amish country.
That's find in East Texas.
Find
for
a different property, man. It might be the thing to do. I mean, you know, cap nails might help you with your poachers.
Money would help you with your low fences.
That's right. You can build a fence.
And
low population.
Then when you have a high fence, you can put more deer in it.
That's it. Yeah, I just, I mean, it sounds like you have been dealt a difficult hand there, and you can maybe take some steps to change some of those things.
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot of help for you here, unfortunately.
Maybe make your place bad to the bone. You know, surrounding property seems to be the problem, right? So, I mean, first of all, add a corn feeder if you don't have one, and just do everything you can to make your place awesome.
Yeah, I would say if you have tillable, make it into bedding. That way, mm-hmm. when deer daylight moving, they're on your property.
The next question: the hardest part is a 7-month off season.
Yeah,
fish.
That's exactly right. Become a fisherman.
Hunt turkeys.
Michael's throwing up.
Do something to keep your mind off of it until it's time to get it on it, and then be ready to rock and roll.
Listen, people from Ohio don't understand, but if you're if you can fish in the same way that we deer hunt.
Yeah.
Like, you can put a lot of tactic into it.
Uh-huh.
So it can be what you make it. I heard somebody say, well, why do you like golfing? Golf's just taking a tiny ball and hitting it in a hole. It's like, man, if you can make it that, for sure. Everybody can make everything to just be simple. But, you know, it ain't like that if you don't want it to be that way. So it could be fishing or golfing or whatever. Just mm-hmm. if you want it to be entertaining to your mind, then make it complicated. You know what I mean? Start pick up a longbow.
Next, the hardest part. I feel like it's finding a buck and a combination of finding the right tree.
Man, I would say the best way to answer this is to go to our YouTube channel. And there's a playlist that may be there anymore. I don't know if it is or not, but it's How to Hunt Deer More Effectively. Is that still there, Tyler?
I think so.
If not, we have a whole series called the Map Scout Challenge that'll help you find the bucks. And then finding the right tree, you can look at some of our hunt setup stuff. I have a How to Hunt from a Saddle video that'll help you with that and stuff like that. And then public land hotspots.
Yeah. How to Hunt Deer More Effectively.
Yeah.
It's got 74 videos in it.
The next.
Bunch of Map Scout Challenge. All kinds of stuff, dude.
Hardest part is entering and exiting a setup without blowing it out.
It's hard.
Yeah. I mean, you're either going to get north winds on cold front days or south winds, depending on where you are, but more than likely south winds on regular days. So, you know, keep that in mind.
You know, deer in the field is a hard thing, too. You know, a lot of times, mm-hmm. like, you go into a place, there's no deer out in the field, but then you kind of get out of the field. And you taught me this, but you can pull in there with a truck, pick up your buddy, and it's way better than a Sasquatch.
Yeah. Yeah.
I taught you that?
No.
All right.
I'm 14. I'm 14 in this video and how to hunt deer effectively. Didn't know I was that young when I started this.
This next one. The hardest part. I have rubs and good tree stands near. Other than setting up downwind, what else can I do?
Man, go what? Ahead. Well,
what? Hard to read?
No, oh. No. I would say those are two things that I don't really. Those are like kind of low on my priority list when I go to find a place to hunt. So, like, here's something that you can do that can negatively affect you, I think, and it's finding a tree that's great for a tree stand. And we jack around all the time about it. We say it a lot.
Oh, it's a good stand tree.
That's a good stand tree right there, you know. And it's fun to think about, right? And then some situations, you know, it is. It actually is. But don't go and thinking that's a good place to put my stand. You need to find where the deer is going to be standing and then find whatever tree you can kill him from before he gets your wind. Or without him getting your wind. That's the main thing. So rubs aren't necessarily like something I consider a lot, even though we've been paying a little more attention to them and trying to learn from the last few years. And the stand tree isn't either. So I guess what I would say is find that deer and then find a way to get into a tree, whatever it takes, the tree that you can kill him from.
Or on the ground.
Yeah. but where you can kill them. And so I would say, yes, you want to set up downwind, but if you've got rubs, it could be a rub line, and maybe yes, but I want to see in a rub line, I would like to see a trail. I wouldn't like to just see like a general direction of rubs as much. It wouldn't give me as much confidence. But I think putting multiple things together on the map and not just rubs, it needs to be some scrapes or, you know, an idea of bed to food travel patterns and what direction that is will really help you in this situation. Then you'll know where that deer is coming from. And then also maybe even look at the rubs. Okay, well, if he's, you know, if he's coming out in the evenings and rubbing these trees before he gets to the edge of the field, then it would be on this side, on the brush side. So anyway, that's what I would think. And then setting up downwind, obviously, where you think he's going to be. So without blowing wind into where he currently is too. So.
All right, next, the hardest part is getting permission to hunt the land.
Money talks. Mm. I mean, it's just one of the heartbreaks we deal with as a whitetail hunter is you drive around, see a big giant buck, and then having the courage to knock on the door and then get told no. It's just hard. Offering money is always good. Offering service could help. Not always as effective. And then pleading your case. Bring a kid. I don't know. Stuff like that. It's just – you're just going to get told no a lot.
Yeah.
At least where we live, you're going to get told no a whole lot.
I think not being afraid to be told no is
– Boy, for sure. I hate it.
It is. Yeah. It's heartbreaking.
There are places where Tyler and I have hunted where we like purposely have never called because we don't want to deal with the heartbreak of being told no.
Yeah. Which is – you're
– it's dumb.
You're not hunting it anyway, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. But, yes, that's the way we are. I'd say just be cordial and be upfront very quickly because – you can really get to sounding like a vacuum salesman if you don't. Mm-hmm. And people will just automatically know will be the first thing in their mind before they even hear you ask a question because they know you're about to sell them a vacuum. And then, oh, what are you talking about? Deer hunting? No, we're not doing that. You know what I mean? So just go ahead and just be like, hey, my name's so-and-so, and I saw a buck out there in your pasture. Was wondering if I might could bow hunt it. If you're a bow hunter, that kind of helps you sometimes. But sometimes we found where people don't want bow hunters for whatever. I could not figure out why.
They're wounders or that they're irresponsible or something.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, that's kind of my thoughts on that. Just be very quick and to the point because people are going to wonder why you're standing there at their door.
It's also a game of numbers. You know, if you ask 30 people, you'll get a permission.
Yeah. And if you can get a reference, that could be good too.
Oh, yeah. So-and-so up the road even, you know, like said, my mate should come down here and talk to them. And you don't know so-and-so very well, so you can throw them under the bus. You're like, yeah, Johnny said I should come talk to you. Oh, really?
Yep.
All right, the next question. My problem tends to be, is the amount of sign I'm seeing enough to be setting up on?
I think in general from these questions, people look at sign a whole lot more than I do, or at least
I was thinking the same thing.
They weigh it harder. Uh-huh. And I wonder if... it's a private land thing somewhat, too.
I feel like it's a beginning thing.
Well, if you're limited to 80 acres, you only can go off of what's on your 80 acres.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and so, like, well, the sign's over there. That's where the deer are, and that very well might be the case. But, I mean, I think that good sign is good, but just you have some reason to be confident about your spot. I mean, there might not be a lick of deer sign right there, but you know that you know, last week a tree fell on the fence, and so now that fence is down, and it's a better place to hunt than it used to be, or something like that. You know, who knows what it is, right? But just you need to have something that gives you the confidence that there's deer there, and maybe more hunting will do that for you. More observation sets will do that for you. By no means like observation sets personally, but, you know, it's a thing that can help people. Yeah, that's what I know.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm just always looking at aerials. I just feel like you get a better idea of how deer are generally moving on a property, looking at the aerial. And then, yeah, you can use sign to kind of – everything just bolsters what your idea is or should. So you get an idea off the map. Then you go in, and you should have not just one thing from the map, but two or three things that all make you think this is where a deer is going to be. And then you go in there – and suddenly there's sign there and it's pretty good, and it's relative to the other sign in the area on your property or whatever, it's really good, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, then yeah, that's the spot we should be, you know. But what is, it's always, the question should always be why. Why is that deer there? What is it doing? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So continue to always try to understand what the deer is going to be doing when you're trying to kill it.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's coming through there. So is that day or night? Is it morning or evening? And which direction is it going or coming from?
Next question is, the hardest part is the wolves.
Man. That's a tough one. Because I don't know many states that you can just do a whole lot about it. I mean, there's some states that you can kill a wolf if you have a tag. But, you know, if you want the actual answer, there are some, dare I say, authorities who have permission to have harvest or have input or have involvement with the wolves. So if they are a serious issue, reach out to the people who can mess with the wolves. Whether that is USDA, your State Department, something, express your opinions, because, you know, this is going to sound real hypocritical, but griping about it on a podcast isn't going to get a lot done. You know, like, you got to talk to somebody who has some pull somewhere. And then if wolves are an issue, like specifically for your deer hunting, Tyler had a great idea one time about at least coyotes and hogs.
Did I?
You were going to goat wire a property like 80 acres and put goat wire all the way around the outside edge so that the deer kind of have a haven from hogs and potentially coyotes. You remember that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So maybe there's something you can do there. Some preventative measures, some husbandry, some might call it.
Hmm.
Or you can do some things for your deer herd that helps them maybe deal with wolves. I don't know. And then all the other questions are about time.
They are.
Right?
Next three.
Which we've covered that quite a bit. that's, I mean, scheduling, communication, all those things come into play. Making it known what's important to you in life and mm-hmm. working together. Maybe even telling your significant other, hey, I could possibly be successful, and then we would have meat to eat and we wouldn't have to buy meat, which right now I think ground hamburger meat's like $6.99 a pound or something ridiculous, right? So it's pretty expensive.
And currently you and I just keep eating it every night out of our freezers, and they stay completely full.
That's it. I don't know what's going on. We had this conversation yesterday, but it's like we keep eating meat, and our freezers have the same amount of food in it. There's no way I eat everything before deer season.
Yeah.
But a lot of that we'll eat during season.
Yeah.
Between our group. Yeah. So I guess there's that happening.
Chili cook-off at church or something, you know.
That'd be good.
Yeah.
I mean, we should have an element chili contest.
Yeah. It's getting kind of warm for the northerners to do that, I think.
Yeah. Michael is going to be sad when it doesn't taste like canned chili.
Oh, Wolf Brand.
That's, you know, that's all Skyline is Wolf Brand, right? They just open the can and dump it out.
Skyline Radio.
Give me a headset. Guys, thank y'all for listening. Brian, great job on the MC.
Way to go,
thanks, guys. Thank
we'll,
you.
We'll definitely do some more of this. I know everybody's kind of hyped up about whitetail, and we have some whitetail video content, some of the stuff that might answer some of these questions that'll be coming out pretty soon. But the next thing to come out on the Element channel will be, Greg, a Florida fishing video. I needed the nod, but they got a nod from Greg. That might even come out this week. Maybe tomorrow, huh?
I hope so.
So be looking for that.
Brian's
it's actually
in that.
Really, really cool. Yeah, Brian.
Dude.
How appropriate.
What a great time,
Brian,
guys.
Real quick, what was
Can't
your favorite part about
it.
Florida?
Sleep. Man, no. Sleep. We didn't do any of that. God, that's a hard question. I would have to say getting in the water. Between the spear fishing and lobster diving was probably my favorite part.
Yeah. Good.
That's just something I don't get to
it
do a lot.
It seemed pretty cool. No.
What about when Michael's flipper touched
kind of. Kind of thought that was it.
Yep. The great white almost got
yeah,
me.
I thought that bull shark got me.
Yeah. Oh. Well, I'm glad he didn't, Brian.
Me too, man.
Yeah. Well, guys, remember to look out for sharks, and remember, this is your element.
Live in it.
You ever get that feeling? The walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins.
Market House has the cleanest, leanest, juiciest meat and seafood shipped to your home overnight. Expect the service of a local butcher and the convenience of a large supplier. Unlike many online butchers, you can grab just one meal's worth or lock in for a subscription box. Choose from grass-fed and grass-finished beef, American Wagyu, free-range poultry, grass-fed lamb, wild-caught king crab, seafood, and more.
For 15% off your first order, use code COUNTRY at checkout. Just visit markethouse.com.
That's MARKETHOUSE.com. And use the code COUNTRY.